Welcome back to another episode of the Mitts and Tweaks podcast. I am your guy, as always, Mitts, and with me, holding up the bigger half, I'd say, is my man Twigs. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a somber time of the year for many of us, and it's that time of year when our fantasy hockey season ends. Now, if you were fortunate enough, as some of us were, to make the playoffs, kudos to you. Well played. Tip of the cap. Unfortunately, for some of us, this is also the end once again. And if you haven't picked up on my subtle subtext, I've been knocked out of the playoffs in my fantasy hockey league. So I am drowning my tears in this delicious whiskey, whilst others maybe even on this podcast, are celebrating another round win and on to the semis.
The show goes on, baby. The show goes on. I wish I could have like an Irish accent and it would be like total Conor McGregor. The double champ does what he wants or whatever. I don't apologize. I don't know. I'm butchering the crap out of this Conor McGregor stuff. Big fight. It's big fight fan. Yeah, it's a tough time for some. Usually the ones that aren't great at fantasy, they get out really quickly. I haven't felt that in a few years. Just riding this constant wave of success, and it feels good. And now watch, yeah. Next week I'm going to be knocked out. It's awesome.
You know, I want to chirp you. I want to take you down a peg because I know where your success lies, and it's dubious at best. But really, what should be happening is instead of me taking this opportunity to take pot shots, the Edmonton Oilers should be reaching out to you and asking how to best take advantage of having Draisaitl and McDavid, as you do in fantasy and as you have had since year one of this 5-year dynasty that we're all just being tortured while we play against you in, because you've taken them and you've won titles. You've contended every year. And
right.
I think that's something the Oilers could learn, is how to maximize that return, how to get that straight to the top. Do you have any words of advice as one GM to another, what the actual Edmonton Oilers can do to replicate your success?
You know, what's hilarious. I went back and I looked, I like to look back at stats, and I went back and I looked at our Yahoo fantasy stats of the past, like 2.5 years that we've been doing this part of our 5-year. We restart every 5 years. And I am the Edmonton Oilers. I am a power play merchant. I don't do well in a lot of other categories. I put up a lot of goals, a lot of assists, and a lot of power plays. And then I lose in every other category that we do scoring in. So faceoffs, I think I was like 4th or 5th. Hits, blocks, PIMs, all that stuff. I was not very great. So I've been riding the back of Mr. McJesus and Leon for a while. I did have to part with them. Right before the playoffs, I went and got myself Austin Matthews and Mitchie Marner, which have been great. I'm all of a sudden a Leafs fan. But yeah, I will also agree with you that my fantasy success has been, it's been hooked up to these superstar players, and I've just been riding along, and it's none of my work. I'm basically Ken Holland, and I don't add anything, and I subtract more than I add, and I somehow keep winning. So it's been great.
Yeah. Well, it's the Pittsburgh Penguin model where you just fall backwards into several generational talents.
Yeah.
And then you don't screw it up.
Yeah. You don't move them.
Connor
McDavid's never moving. And I watch a lot of Edmonton games just for fantasy reasons. And maybe I'm a closet fan. No, I'm not. It's a joke. I'm not a closet fan. It was a full joke. I hate the Oilers. But I also love Connor McDavid on my fantasy team.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. My. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. But you know what you know what I might be becoming? This is a good segue. I might be becoming an Arizona Coyotes fan. Like, they are fun. Like, they are fun to watch. They're high scoring. They're fast. It's kind of like the Buffalo Sabres of November and December when like Tage Thompson and Deline were like just plowing through teams. And now we got like Clayton Keller, and here we go, Mr. Hayden, racking up points against they're playing loose. They're out of it. They're in the Bedard sweepstakes. Maybe they don't want to win as much as they have been, but they're playing loose. It's a fun team to watch.
They've got like three young, valuable goaltenders right now, which is wild. It doesn't make much sense to me. I thought for sure when you started with that their high scoring that you were going to say something about their high school sized arena, but no, it's funny because I was looking at things today, just like looking over in preparation for this podcast because I'm a professional. I was looking over statistics and I did the cartoon rubbing my eyes. I couldn't understand what I was seeing. They are like 20 and 13 at home or something like that. Like they have a dominant home record. And they're one of the worst teams in the league, which obviously alludes to what their road record is like. But I mean, suffice it to say, apparently it's not a great barn for the visitors. And maybe that's because when you're playing there as a visitor, you get the opportunity to meet every one of the fans on a first and last name basis. But whatever it is, I don't even know what to say other than like this is in the entire history of the Arizona Coyotes. There's been probably you can probably count on one hand the amount of times that they've had something that's considered like a positive, something that you can be happy about. And we wouldn't have thought that this is one of the years where we would find something. But they're playing really well at home right now. They're playing loose. There's a reason to be excited, if you're a Coyotes fan, which if you are, kudos to you. You are a true fan.
Let me throw this at you. Clayton Keller, this was tweeted out by Mike Gold on Twitter today, and I find it fascinating because there's not enough, and this might be because they're playing in the Arizona market. Clayton Keller has more points this season than Austin Matthews, Kirill Kaprizov, Johnny Gaudreau, Steven Stamkos, Alex Ovechkin, Dylan Larkin, Kyle Connor, Brady Tkachuk, Brad Marchand, and Sebastian Aho.
Yeah.
That's
an impressive list. Like, and Johnny Gaudreau.
Some bitch.
I think I have more points than Johnny Gaudreau.
Yeah, that's fair. Everybody's got more points. But to be fair, if you're going to break down the bottom feeder teams, if it feels a lot like Buffalo did last year towards the end, right? They freed themselves of Eichel. All of a sudden, they started playing well. Granato had them going the right way. And they started playing loose and having fun. And then it translated into this season, a little bit more success, right? They were battling for a wild card. It wasn't anything crazy. They're not going to get in. It's going to take a miracle for Buffalo to get in.
Yeah.
But they were still there for the first time in a long time. They're right there and the future looks bright, but Arizona is playing well, like really good hockey. Is it playoff caliber hockey? No, they're in the bottom for a reason, but it's different hockey than what say Columbus is playing, Chicago, even though they went on a little heater, San Jose, right? Like St. Louis, who's in the bottom right now. Hell, we can even say Calgary, right? We'll take shots at both teams. That's going to translate into next season, right? Clayton Keller might take another step. He's going to break. He's on pace this year to be the highest scoring Coyote in their history, which is crazy. I don't know. I'm loving the trajectory for these Coyotes and their fans, and hopefully they get their arena. That isn't, I believe it isn't public money at all. I think it's all private money, which is even better. I'd have to double check. Maybe I'll do that while you're going on about how great the Coyotes are.
You know me so well. You've got 5-10 minutes. I don't know, it's great to see, and there are not a lot of preseason predictions from last year that I want to bring up anytime soon that we made on this podcast, but because they didn't go well, but one that we did talk about and that I remember I thought at least when it came to the Coyotes, what I like the best case scenario, but I think that they were hoping for or maybe just what they lucked out into, was kind of the situation that's happening right now, where they they obviously weren't going to be competing this year. They were never going to be competing this year. But what they've done is, in the process of going to this, you know, university arena, and they've created something that is exciting and entertaining, which, I mean, really what a lot of teams should be taking into account more often than they do is the entertainment factor, because that's why NFL, that's why the NBA has the money that they do, is the entertainment factor. People want to see it. It's not just the hardcore fans. It reaches out, it brings new fans, it crosses that bridge. So yeah, this is they've been able to do that, and they're able to sell out because they don't have to try to fill a 20,000 seat arena with a below, you know, average team. But they're playing, their young players are playing well. They're making moves to try to set themselves up for the future, and they're just letting them play. And so here we are now at the end of the season that, you know, started with them being an absolute joke. They are, you know, playing great at home. So especially if you're going to be a basement team, like you make your own fans happy so people want to come to the game. And now they've got the opportunity to actually turn this into something to support the franchise long term. You know, now they're building that fan base and they're building that excitement. And I mean, goodness, God help them if they start to put some wins together in the next year or two, obviously like next season or two. There's something else. And they still have assets that would be really, really reasonable for them to move and could get a return, you know, especially when you're looking at like the goaltending and you know, a couple of other players in there. Nick Schmaltz is not a part of the long-term roster.
No, and he'll fetch a nice haul too. He's been a great player for the Coyotes the past couple of years. You look at their draft pick cupboard, and it's, again, I don't know how many people want to hear about the Arizona Coyotes, and here we are talking about them, but you look at their draft picks that they have the next couple of years, they're stacked. Like, they're already full. They have Logan Cooley coming. A lot of their players that are young, like Yusuf Alamaki, they got off waivers. Clayton Keller is still only 24. They have the Italian rookie, Matias Marcelli. He's 22. He's playing really well hockey. They have the Veg. They have Connor Ingram. They have Ivan. They have Ivan, who's 24. Like, all their goalies are under 26 years old. That's a good core, and it's a fast core, yeah. And it's just St. Louis alumni, man. Like, you look at who's running that team. St. Louis has been successful year in, year out, year in, year out, all the time. And they have a plan, and they know when to go for it, and they know when they don't. And Bill Armstrong is doing a great job, and he's going to flip Nick Schmaltz probably in the summer for a nice little, maybe he'll be a roster player, a younger one that can fit with that core. Who knows? Maybe they win the Bedard lottery, and they're in the works of getting a new arena. Back to the arena. I lied. $200 million of this $1.7 billion is being asked from the taxpayers. So $200 million. I thought it was zero. I apologize. 200 of the 1.7, which is still funny that the city of Calgary and the Calgary Sports and Entertainment Group is basically asking for a 50-50. So,
yeah.
So, you know what? That's hilarious.
The ideal should be it is 100% privately funded. 100%. That should be the ideal.
Yeah.
You won't change my mind about that. When we're talking about the reality of it, what a lot of other organizations are pushing, like the Flames, suggesting a $200 million out of the $1.7 billion going to be, I mean, that's not nothing, but for, you know, the scale of that, the possibility of that, like that's a reasonably good-ish deal when you compare it to everything else out there.
Yeah,
you're not going to get me off.
You still have some owners that are investing $1.5 billion into your area, right? So
yeah.
I think I would do that deal.
That's a lot of Dave Matthews concerts.
Okay. Gotta catch myself.
I'm gonna use this. We're gonna kind of flip on Arizona, but I want to use this as a jumping off point because
right.
Well, we haven't had a chance, and we get the elephant in the room. We haven't had a chance since the trade deadline to really talk about any of this. And let's just pretend it was by design because we wanted to let the trade settle in and see what's going on. We now have some data, and one of the most surprising things is the Jacob Chikrin effect. So here we have a player we were all excited for. Everybody wanted to see moved, put him on a team that wants him. Since the trade where he went to a red hot Ottawa Senators team, they have been awful. I think they've got 3 wins in their last 10 since the give or take since the trade. The Coyotes have been on fire since they traded him and relieved themselves of him. Obviously, I'm not trying to draw a conclusion that he's any kind of a cancer or an issue, but what? That's going to be a huge surprise. I mean, the Senators were on fire. They were chasing down one of those last playoff spots, and I mean, I may have even actually said it, but when they got Chikrin, I thought, oh, they're in the playoffs now. Like, they're already knocking at the door. They're playing great. Understandably, Talbot's down and Sogard's been not good, but man, what a reversal of fortunes, especially contrary to what we would have expected after that trade.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna. I think Jacob Chikrin's come as advertised. I think if you look at his Corsi and his expected goals for, they're the same as when he was in Arizona. I think he's still like averaging, I think it's like 7 shots per 60 minutes, like per game. Like he's still that offensive defenseman. I still love the ad. I love the ad. I don't think it's bad for. I don't think it's bad for Ottawa in any case. Like, I think next season they're going to be rolling. I think they should probably get a new head coach. DJ's had a long leash there with little to zero success. It's goaltending, man. Mm. And it's hilarious to see, especially because I think Pierre Dorion has been masterclass lately as the GM for the Ottawa Senators. He goes out and he trades Gustafson to the Wild for Mr. Cam Talbot, and Gustafson has like basically taken the starting job in Minnesota, even though I'm pretty sure Marc-Andre Fleury is 7-0 or 6-0 in his last 6 or 7. He's still been the starter. So it's been a great 1A, 1B, where in Ottawa, Talbot hasn't stayed healthy. He hasn't really gone on that role that everybody expected him to do. He's definitely older. Right, I believe is a UFA at the end of this year. Goaltending, coaching, depth, getting Josh Norris back next year. They're gonna be in the playoffs next year. It's not gonna. There's a reason why I think their projected sell point right now is over $1 billion. Right, when Forbes only valued them at $600 million or something like that. Like, they have a bright future with Brady Tkachuk, Chikrin, Chabot, Sogard. Freaking Batherson, Norris, like it goes on and on and on and on. They're a really well-built team. Dorion is DeBrincat. We haven't even mentioned DeBrincat. Giroux just locked in. Like, yeah, it's up and down right now. Tim Stützle again. Like, their team is really good. It just too many waves this year. But they took a step. It feels like they're right there, right? But they got to get their goaltending figured out, and they have to get some better coaching. That's my take on Ottawa. But I'm not going to slight Jacob Chikrin. I think I get what you're trying to say here, insinuating, right? Like, oh, Jacob Chikrin was the cancer in that room. No, I don't think he was the cancer. I think he's coming to Ottawa. He's come as advertised.
I said specifically, I'm not suggesting that. And more so how surprising and shocking. I mean, you know, that's one of those stats that you throw out there. And yeah, like, it's easy to put a tweet like that out, and I'm sure that's where I've thought that Ottawa's record since obtaining him has been crap, and Arizona's record since moving him has been great. But that doesn't tell the story, because the story is that Ottawa's goaltending has been crap, primarily due to injury, right? And that he hadn't played in like a month in Arizona anyway. So there's no like, you know, like
Yeah.
unless he was, you know, in the whatever they pass for a luxury box down there in Arizona booing them. There's no way it had any kind of real effect on the on-ice product. So, but no, it was just, it's a fun little fact, I think.
Did you hear what Bill Armstrong, he went on a podcast. I think it was with Andy Strickland, if I believe him, if
Should
I
have been
believe
ours.
so. He was talking about how the Jacob Chikrin trade went on for so long. And he said it, a lot of people forget this. It wasn't the Arizona Coyotes that said, hey, we want to move Jacob Chikrin, right? And even I forgot this. It was Jacob Chikrin asked to be traded. And then Jacob Chikrin got hurt right after he asked to be traded, which then prolonged that trade process, right? And then in the summer, there was a team that offered like in between the 20s and 30s, like first round picks. And Jacob Chikrin didn't want to go there, so they didn't trade him. And I think there's a prospect and all that. I think Ottawa did okay. I mean, not Ottawa. I think Arizona did okay in the sense that Ottawa's pick might be somewhere in the 1 to 10 range in this year's draft, right? Depending on where they fall and how their goaltending handles up, they're not going to be pushing for the playoffs anyways. I think Ottawa, I think I, man, I keep mixing up the two. I think Arizona did okay. But we did forget that Jacob Trickin is the first person that started this whole thing buying, being asked to be traded.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And that always, you know, that often puts them in a bit of a tough spot when you know a guy wants to move in terms of what you're willing to pay. What's funny is you look at a team like Arizona, who has a, you know, nearly, 60% win record at home, and then obviously terrible on the road, and they're in the basement. There's another team that has an exceptionally mediocre home record, but is fire on the road, and they're firmly embedded in the playoffs, and that's the Seattle Kraken. And I saw that, and we don't even talk about that at length, but I just wanted to I wanted to point out the preposterousness of that a team that is, you know, not a lock, but firmly entrenched in the playoff race at this point, that they have such a mediocre home record. It's such an odd thing. You listening at home, go ahead and take a look at the records of all the teams this year. And if you're, you know, nerds like us, you see this all the time. It's quite rare that a playoff team doesn't have at least a slightly more favorable record at home. You see a variance there, but very rarely is it like a 500 home record. And if I remember correctly, there's might be like one or two games above, if that.
It's their home record is 16-15-4, which is shocking because the team right below them is Winnipeg, who is reeling right now, and they're the complete opposite, where they're 21-12-2 at home and 18-17-1, where Seattle's 22-9-3 on the road. Usually it's the other way around. Usually the really successful playoff teams, all their success starts at home, and then basically they're decently good on the road. Seattle is a weird team. Like if you were to take all the rosters, and I'm still like I look at this team and I love Matty Beniers, Bjorkstrand's nice, but they have some overachievers. Vince Dunn's overachieving. They had Martin Jones for a stretch there where he was like, "Who the heck is this guy?" Right? He was overachieving. Are the Seattle Kraken going to make the playoffs and get absolutely bombed in the first round?
They're going to make the playoffs, and I think they're going to lose in the first round. I don't know if I'd say they're going to I mean, it obviously depends on how it all shakes out. I think that I could see them doing five, six games, depending on who they get. But I don't know. There's going to be plenty of time to kick the Kraken later on, especially if they lose, because I love taking shots when they're down. But this brings us to something that I wanted to touch on is. in the West,
right?
The top seven teams right now,
mm-hmm.
all the top seven teams in the West, the wor like they've all won six or more of their last 10 games. They're on fire. They're you know, all year long, and we've been talking about the Eastern Conference, and
mm-hmm.
you know, fair enough, especially with Boston over there putting up a historic, cannot be understated or overstated how historic their season is looking. It's heavily weighted because of them especially, but the East has been stronger all year. But if you look at the records right now, the last 10, and you know, this is the time going into playoffs, a lot of the East, up and down from top to bottom, are kind of just getting by and don't look like they're putting any momentum together. Whereas the West is starting to figure it out. Colorado's won five in a row at this point. They're catching on. They're starting to get healthy. They're flying. I think we're going to see it's getting interesting. I don't know. It's getting exciting. I think Boston's still probably going to be the class of the West, but I do, or the East, but I really love how the West is heating up and is be looking a lot less sad than it has all year.
Yeah, let's just take a moment and give like a little round of applause for the Pacific Division, who right now has the best teams in the West. The Vegas Golden Knights lead the Western Conference. They've been a force all year, and I don't think they get talked about enough. I think even with Jack Eichel struggling a bit, now he's starting to come on. You're starting to see him. He had a hat trick today. He's looking good. They're 43-21-6 with 92 points. The LA Kings are right behind them, 2 points behind, with 40 wins, 20 losses, 10 overtime. Like, no, those are the two best teams in the West right now. Not Colorado, not Dallas, not Minnesota, not Edmonton. Those two teams, right? And I think it's time to give some respect, because the Pacific Division for 2 years has just been taking a beating about how terrible it is. They're all on fire. Like, Edmonton, LA, Vegas, Seattle, 6-3-1 in their last 10. I don't know. I think.
Wasn't it LA last year that gave Edmonton so much heat in the first round?
It was a great matchup. Went 7.
Yeah.
It was a great matchup.
And we're probably lining up right now for a repeat.
You sure are. Right now, if the playoffs ended today, you'd have LA, Edmonton, and basically any of those teams can win the division. They're all at 70 games. Edmonton's 6 points back. LA's 2 of Vegas. But yeah, it's the West is going to be fun. The East has some juggernauts. The East has some juggernauts, right? But you got to look. Carolina just lost a huge player. Even though they're still first in the Metro, that's going to be a huge loss for them in the playoffs. New Jersey's coming on. The New York Rangers, and their ads are looking good. I don't know. I'm with you. Like, the West is heating up, but those big boys in the East are still not to be messed with.
No, it still looks like, I mean, it's going to be, it's your heart almost goes out to some of those teams in the East, because where their fans more so, because you look at New York, the scoring in the last week that they've had looks like the missing piece for them. If they can carry that into the playoffs with Shesterkin back there, my goodness, watch out. But you've got the Canes that by all rights should be falling off, but they're still rolling. They're still getting it done. So good on them. The Devils, probably they're having a little bit of lull after their big ads at the trade deadline. Their goaltending's stumbling a little bit. Like, they're not in the risk of falling out of the playoffs, but they're not looking quite as strong as the other guys. And then you go over, you look at like Boston, enough said. Tampa, Toronto, probably first round again. My goodness. Oof. And then, I mean, I feel a little bit for the Islanders and the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, who look, I mean, nothing's set in stone. Nothing's locked. We're coming into that last couple of weeks where, you know, fates are decided, but I really don't know if it matters which one of those teams or whom else makes it in. Someone's about to just get annihilated by Boston and wonder why they even tried so hard all year. And the other is going to face the winner of the Metro. It could be any one of three teams that are just stacked line after line after line, pairing after D pairing after D pairing with solid goaltending. Like, my goodness.
Let's do this. Let's do this little game here really quick. The wild card's heating up. You just touched base on the Islanders and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And nipping at their heel is this Florida Panthers team who won the President's Trophy last year and they decided to blow it up. Giroux, gone. Sherratt, gone. Kachuk in. Huberto out. Uyghur out. I wish that never happened. But they're rolling. Like, Matthew Tkachuk is single-handedly carrying this Florida Panthers team into the playoffs. He is unbelievable this year. He's about to shatter career highs that he set last year. He's carrying them. He's bringing them fight every single game. And I saw it like firsthand the past 6 years when he was here. He's amazing. Maybe I didn't think he'd be as good as he is right now in Florida, which is driving me bonkers. But you have the three teams. Those are the three teams that are fighting. Pittsburgh Penguins, which are reeling a little bit. The New York Islanders, they have two games on. They've played two more games than Pittsburgh and Florida. They're also 2 points up on Pittsburgh and 3 points up on Florida. So out of the three, you have the New York Rangers sitting at New York Islanders sitting. Geez, wow, I am fumbling this one. The New York Islanders are sitting first in the wild card. Pittsburgh Penguins are sitting second, tied with Florida. I mean, not tied with Florida. They have one more point. Who are you taking out of the three team? That was word scramble there, and it was mess up city, and I apologize.
So my options are the New York Islanders, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Florida Panthers. I mean, out of that group right now, the Islanders, I think, are head and shoulders. I mean, they maybe don't have anybody as hot as Matthew Tkachuk right now, but they've got depth and they're good everywhere, really. The Islanders aren't that far off the top teams in the East, but they're just a few points lower, let's say, in talent than everybody else. You know, they've got a lot of good players. They're built well. They roll, you know, really good deep lines, lots of centers, lots of good goaltending, but just at every position, they're just a little bit less good than the top teams in the East who are just so dominant. Pittsburgh, I mean, at this point, I don't know, they got to figure out what's going on in goal, because Jari looks like he's seen a ghost back there, and which is really disappointing because he had such a great season last year and looked like he was ready to, you know, take it to the next level. And then they got all those injuries. Casey DeSmith, for some reason, they're not handing him the reins. I know, not that he, you know, demands it by any means, but like, Yari's been so bad. It's just, you know, at this point, just throw a loose sack tied to the crossbar and hope it catches more and they'll be fine. But I shouldn't bag on them too much. I don't watch enough of their games. It could be a defensive breakdown in front of them because that's a team that, I mean, they're hanging on with their top end talent. It's an absolute mystery how Sidney Crosby is still as good as he is, with what they also have there. Pittsburgh could hang on. They've got Crosby. He will them to that wild card spot, but that's probably where, as far as he could take them. And Florida, yeah, I don't know. I think I'd written them off months ago. So other than Matthew Tkachuk being on fire and you know, Barkov just being one of the most underrated players in the NHL, be hard pressed to see what else they can do with that. And sorry, Trev, but Buffalo is stumbling at the absolute worst time. I mean, it is to be expected, Buffalo Trev, that a team that young, still learning, still putting the pieces together, still have an exceptionally bright future that I'm very excited for. And then in that exact same boat, you've got our friends down in Ottawa. We already talked about that, you know, this seems like it's more of a learning year for them than a contending year or threatening year. So, and I don't think there's any other teams in the East this year.
So out of the two, out of the three, because there's only three, who are you putting your money on? Pittsburgh, New York, or Florida?
New York.
So New York, and who's filling the second spot? There's two.
I'm going to probably give it to Pittsburgh.
So you're keeping it as is?
Keeping it as is. I'm a status quo kind of guy.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think that...
No, that's fair. Let's swing over to the West. A little bit more, a little bit, couple more teams in contention here. Couple more teams. Yeah. There's four. Out of these four teams, you have Seattle, who's still playing really well right now. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10. You have, they're sitting in wild card number one. You have the Winnipeg Jets, who are falling hard. Is this, maybe it's, you're riding Hellebuck a little bit too much. Maybe that's the issue.
Hey, three maybe, back-to-backs in a row.
Yeah, maybe Rick Bowness and Shovel Day off. Maybe get a backup goalie if you know this is going to happen, right? Maybe don't go get Riddick if you're not going to play him in back-to-backs. They're 4-5-1 in their last 10. They are, Sid, they have played the most games. They played 71. They're in wild card number two. Then the Calgary Flames, 4 points back of Winnipeg and 6 points back of Seattle. They're 4-3-3. Just looking to fight in. And then the team that has the most games in hand is the Nashville Predators, 34-26-8. And they're 5-3-2. They're 5-3-2. After selling how many core players? Yeah. Nino, gone. Ekholm, gone. Right? Like Tanner Jeannot, gone. Which is not looking good for Tampa, by the way. That is a shocker. But
yeah, he's no Kelly Yarncroak.
Yarncroak?
Yeah.
Well, they had him before. That whiskey's getting to you.
Good whiskey.
Yeah, good whiskey. Give me your two teams that are going to make it out of those four.
Man, I hate to be that guy, but it's Winnipeg and it's Seattle. Both teams have been much higher than that this year. I think, as it mentioned, Seattle still won six in the last 10. I think they're just seeing that the rest of the teams around them are heating up. So I don't think Seattle's fallen off at all. I just think that the other teams that are, let's say, a little more experienced, a little more talented, have cleaned up their act and are playing better. So Seattle falls down the rankings. I think Seattle's a lock for the playoffs. I'm going to say right now, I don't love saying that. I like kicking them. What can I say? But they're a lock to make the playoffs. And that sad sack trio that you threw up there, let's just point out that, Roman Josi is going to miss some time. Who knows how much, but I wouldn't be surprised if they, exhibited an abundance of caution, considering they'd already decided they don't have a chance to the playoffs or to contend, and they're probably more comfortable going lower in the standings.
Mm-hmm.
So unless Josi pushes back and thinks that he has a chance for Norris, I think that they could probably even consider shutting him down, even if it's not super, super official, if it's, day to day, week to week.
Mm-hmm.
Calgary.
And the frickin' year.
what can you say about the Flames this season? Other than oof.
Do you want me to tell you? I'll tell you. They might be one of the most unlucky, and I'm not here about saying hockey's luck and you got it or you don't, but there's a little bit of it, right? And anything you play, there's a little bit of luck. Mm-hmm. They've hit the most crossbars, the most posts. They have the most one goal losses in the league. They have broken an NHL record for outshooting their team by 10 shots or more and still losing that game, and then still losing the game. They are the top two teams for possession this season, for generating shots this season, but then they're only 17th in the league for high danger chances. So basically what I'm trying to say is they're all show. There is not a lot of finish on this team. They are also a team that's coached by Daryl Sutter that has somehow taken a 115-point winger and a former Stanley Cup champion in Nazem Kadri, who had a career year. Again, nobody thought he was going to hit that again this year. And basically said, F you two, you guys are going to suck. And never in the NHL history have we seen a winger that, or any player. Actually, let's say this. He broke the record for most assists by a left wing. He's going to get like 50, 60 points. That's cut in half. Cut in half. No, I'm with you. Are they going to make the playoffs? No, they're not going to make the playoffs. Is Nashville going to make the playoffs? Hell no. They sold off. Why would they want to make the playoffs? I guess for the revenue. Winnipeg should just like wake up a little bit and decide to like grab this thing and get in after they missed last year. What they lost to St. Louis today in a shutout, even though they didn't give it to Hofer because he left for one, you know, little skate fix, right? But no, Calgary's not making the playoffs. This is Seattle. This is Winnipeg's time. And if I'm wrong, I gouge my eyes because I don't want to watch any Flames hockey, playoff hockey. None. They're terrible. They hate the coach. They don't want to be there at all. They don't want to be there. Hell, the GM doesn't have a contract. They didn't know if they were selling or buying at the deadline. They don't know who they are. Watch a game. Watch Jonathan Huber. Do you think he's having fun? Hell, the fans aren't having fun. Go on Flames Twitter. Go on Flames Reddit. Go anywhere. Flames Facebook page. Don't go there. That's pretty toxic. It's not fun. It's crazy. No, the Calgary Flames. You didn't really ask me. I kind of forced myself into saying like how I felt about the Calgary Flames. They are a bunch of pretenders with no, and they have a map and they don't know which way they want to go. It's like, hey, you know who, there's two pluses I'll give this season. I think Rasmus Anderson's turned into like a 1-2 defenseman. He's incredible. Mm-hmm. And I think Tyler Toffoli is a player and he's underpaid, which is rare on the Flames. He's underpaid. And he's just shattered career highs. Those are the two pluses. That's it. That's it. And Daryl Sutter will be back next year. So thank you, Lord.
With more power.
More power.
If they didn't like him as a coach, they're going to love him as a GM coach.
Oh, my God.
I saw something with Vancouver Canucks Twitter this week, which was great, saying the Calgary Flames were going to stock their shelves with Canucks players. What did they expect this season?
No kidding. It's like we just went out and got Troy Stetcher. Well, actually, I've enjoyed Troy Stetcher. He had a big fight the other day against Vegas and like ripped the jersey. It was crazy. Yeah. For a small guy, I'll take him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I'll tell you what, Winnipeg fans, I'm going to throw you a bone here. I'm going to tell you this right now. I doubted you preseason and you surprised me. Rick Bonus made it happen. Connor Hellebuck having a great year. I'm going to do you a favor. And I'm going to tell you this. The Winnipeg Jets stink, and they got no business making the playoffs. You're welcome. You're welcome, Jets fans. I'm not going to spell it out for you. But we all know what I've just done.
Yeah, we know what you're doing.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. Let's talk about the hottest news in the NHL. We've got a couple minutes left. I mean, let's talk about what is on everyone's mind. And that is the St. Louis Blues crease.
I thought we were going James Reimer route. I didn't know. But, you know, let's avoid that one.
I almost forgot about that.
No.
Ridiculous piece of shit, James Reimer. I guess now the rest of the hockey world knows how Toronto feels about him and can empathize. Yeah. What an absolute disappointment.
And no, and if you don't, here we're not going to talk about, but if you want a perfect statement on the situation, go read what Brian Burke said about the whole thing. And if a rainbow jersey, you know what? No, let's move on. Let's go with Jordan Binnington. Yeah.
No, let's just say this. There's nothing that we can say that is more well thought out, more clever, more poignant, more scathing, more entertaining. There's no way we can top what you can find right now on social media about James Reimer.
No, it's like, good.
All across the board. It doesn't matter what you're interested in, which angle you're looking for. It's a smorgasbord of dunking on Reimer on every single level from every color on the rainbow. And let's just leave it at that. We can't top that. I've enjoyed watching and reading about the depths of his hypocrisy and ridiculousness and just how dumb he is.
To Binnington. Yeah,
I mean, listen. Binnington seems like just a normal weirdo by comparison. Binner taking his 2-game suspension after the world was robbed of the goalie fight that we've all wanted to see between him and Marc-Andre.
Those linesmen should be fired.
Oh,
how can you stop that fight? As a ref, have you robbed. Not watched Jordan Binnington's antics during games?
Yeah.
You should also want to see him get his face pounded, right?
Yeah.
And Jordan, yeah. Why are you celebrating, pumping up? You just let the Minnesota Wild come back. You left 5 goals in, 4 unanswered, and you're acting like you're this wrestler that just pumped up the crowd. Now you're kicked out. You were about to get spanked by that French Canadian. Spanked.
We'll never know.
No, he was going to.
We'll never know. I have a weird fan theory that Jordan Binnington is the greatest fighter of all time. And I'm just really looking forward to having it, exercised.
The day's got to happen. It's got to happen.
It's insane to me that at this point in his career, he hasn't had a fight that we've been able to see. And not that they're remotely similar in any way, shape, or form. But when you think about how many fights Ray Emery had, and that Emery had not only goalie fights, but Ray Emery fought skaters and fighters. And I'm not comparing the two, but Binnington's been begging for a fight and he just can't get one. It's astounding. But what I also want to point out, and what I think a lot of St. Louis Blues fans already know, is that one of the reasons why we're okay with taking a step back this year, why we're okay with moving some talent out, some icons of the team and the franchise. Yeah. The rest of the hockey world got a little taste of what's coming up in the pipeline with our goaltending prospects that we brought up to fill in for Binnington, and he's probably going to be sent back down to the AHL because is it the Thunderbirds, if I'm not mistaken, or Springfield? I don't know. Can't remember the team. But they're going to make a run for the AHL playoffs, and he's just going to do a cheeky "How you doing?" 2-0 NHL record before he goes down to try to win the Calder Cup with his AHL team, and then backstops us to many cups in the future. So,
Mr. Hofer.
Everybody else. Mr. Hofer.
He's looked great.
As in, he's got 2 wins, and he's got 0-2 attempts at a loss.
I think he's got a 1.0 goals against. Mr. Hofer.
Got robbed of the shutout today because he had to get his skate blade fixed. While Grice, that James Reimer wannabe, made a single save, which was the most impressive performance he's had as a Blue all year long. Good riddance. Take care. I hope you don't resign him. That'll be really tragic. But yeah, no, Blues temp check. It is what it is. Where the future is bright. It's maybe not coming tomorrow, but man, I'm pretty stoked with what the Blues have coming down the pipeline to get a bunch of draft picks coming into this big draft year. We've already got some great talent with, you know, obviously Thomas. Kyrie Russell's figured out, but he's young enough. Turpchenko, Alexandrov. My goodness, we got Jake Neighbors. Snuggerud coming up in a couple of years. I'm telling you, Blues are just going to take a quick little year or two.
Smart.
Where they figure it out. And, you know, by then, hopefully, we've gotten rid of some of those contracts on defense.
Hey, Jacob Vrana.
Good. I mean, let's look, Vrana, getting Vrana for a bag of pucks.
Yeah.
And giving him an opportunity to, the guy can play hockey. Everything else aside, he can play hockey. We get Kapanen for a bag of pucks.
Free and waivers. He's
got four goals so far as a Blue, looking great, and they've got him for another year. It's nothing. If he plays well for the team next year, they're probably going to flip him to somebody else for some draft capital going into the next playoff run. And if not, like, it's a win-win situation for the Blues. They're killing it. Doug Armstrong, another fantastic trade deadline, another great season. He can't control the on-ice product. All he can do is put the pieces in place, and he's the best in the business at it. And so as a Blues fan, obviously not at the start of the year, we thought we were going to make the playoffs. We thought we had a chance at it. But I tell you, I love that Doug Armstrong assesses it, makes the decision, and goes after it. On, you know, unlike some of these teams that just love to suck all year and then go on a run at the end of the season, only to miss the playoffs, get a terrible draft pick, and just, again, go into the offseason with no identity, no clue where they're going. Oh, am I hitting a little too close to home? I mean, I was talking about Vancouver Canucks, but I guess the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks are basically interchangeable at this point.
Vancouver's wild, man. They should have held off on the Rick Tocchet hiring. Why do they do this every year? Just keep recycling coaches through Vancouver. They'll give you a hot, hot stretch, and they'll come back to reality next year. And then all the fans will be screaming for a rebuild. They'll fire the coach. Hot, hot stretch. Cycle. Yeah. It's a cycle. Yeah. They're worse than Calgary. I love it. But they're going to get a better draft pick. It's okay. Oh, and that's the show.
That's the show. Thank you, everyone, for joining us once again. Yeah, appreciate you coming back to us after we took a quick little week off there. You know, just,
work.
Just need, sometimes,
sorry, boys.
Sometimes,
and girls.
Hey, sometimes you just need to take a little me time.
There was no me time.
That is what it is. Once Sportsnet picks us up, once Rogers buys up all this IP, and we'll come to you regularly, 17 times a week. But we'll be making the big bucks. So until then, you can look for us again on all of the major podcast networks. You can find us on YouTube, as always. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us now on Instagram. Although, to be completely honest, I need to put a lot more effort into Instagram. And by a lot, I mean any. But you can find us on there. And shout out for Buffalo Trev being the only person besides myself that follows the account at this moment.
What an outro.
As always, thank you all so much. We're very, very grateful for all of you. Take care of yourself. Take care of those around you. We love you. Have a great week. We'll see you again soon.